You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I often ask this when I lecture on Lincoln or I lecture on the Civil War. What if you go to do research on the Civil War? What's the name? What's the official name of the Civil War? Now, I got a lot of studs here in the audience. I want one of my pass-fail students who are in senior year.
The science of happiness.
Appreciating modern painting.
Dilemmas of modern medicine.
Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War.
The history of jazz.
The artistic genius of Michelangelo.
When intuition fails.
Turning points that changed American history.
The psychology of religion.
The genius of Mozart.
The future of humans.
One Day University. The most acclaimed and popular professors from top colleges, their best lectures, fascinating conversations. Hi, I'm Richard Davies. Let's learn.
What's the name of the war? Yeah, see, you're all good. You're all good. It's the War of the Rebellion. If success...
I'm Lou Major. I'm Distinguished Professor of American Studies and History at Rutgers University. I lecture on Abraham Lincoln, What's Fact and What's Fiction.
You're a rebel. When I gave a lecture on Lincoln in Atlanta, they all said it's the War of Northern Aggression. I said, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Make no mistake about it.
What do we get wrong about him? Is there one thing above others that we make a big mistake when we think of Lincoln?
Lincoln is so complicated in so many ways, and of course he's politicized. So when you ask, what do we get wrong about him? It depends on your point of view, right? The biggest question has always been, of course, Lincoln and slavery, Lincoln and emancipation. The people who believe that he truly is the great emancipator who freed the slaves, and the people who cherry pick from other things that he said to indicate that he was a racist who didn't really care about slavery, who didn't free the slaves. So you start there and you can move into all kinds of different questions, because history is about interpretation. We try to know the facts the best that we can, but ultimately it's our job to turn facts into truths. And so the truths of Lincoln, you're going to have different people disagreeing upon. Take, for example, the issue of Lincoln and slavery. Lincoln was always against slavery. He said, I'm naturally anti-slavery. I can't recall a place and a time when I did not think and feel so. But he wasn't always an abolitionist. He wasn't always committed to freeing the slaves. So the question then becomes, when you ask what's fact and what's fiction, well, was he against slavery? Was he not against slavery? Did he free the slaves? Did he not free the slaves? So a lot depends on how you frame the question, the answer that one gets.
He had a very different policy view on slavery when he started as president than a couple of years later.
He's always against slavery, but he can't act against slavery when he becomes president, even if he wanted to.
Slavery is a state institution protected by state laws. Federal government has no power over slavery. And if you're a Southern Unionist who owns slaves, you're still entitled to your property. He has two generals early in the war, General Hunter and General Fremont, who issue military orders freeing the slaves in their areas. And what does Lincoln do? He immediately revokes those orders, and people go apoplectic. Those on the left, I mean, the anti-slavery abolitionist crowd. Lincoln says, if there is a power to act against slavery, it is vested in me as commander-in-chief and not in any of my generals.
This is the thing about Lincoln. This is where people get so confused on the subject of Lincoln and slavery. Why couldn't he act against slavery? He didn't have the power to do so. Lincoln time and again said that I cannot act against slavery. I will not act against slavery. He said it leading up to the Civil War to try and reassure those Southern states that they had nothing to worry about with him being elected president. They didn't believe that, and 11 of them seceded, but he does not, cannot, even if he wanted to, abolish slavery at the beginning of the war. So the question then becomes, how do we get from March of 1861, when he says, I can't do anything against slavery, to January 1st, 1863, when he issues an Emancipation Proclamation freeing the slaves? That is the story of Lincoln and slavery.
How radical was the Emancipation Proclamation?
Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist, said, the Emancipation Proclamation stood next to the Declaration of Independence as one of the two pole stars of liberty in America. At the time, people recognized it to be the most significant document since the Declaration. It has lost some of its luster over time. That's another subject, perhaps, and another story about reputation, about how the past gets viewed through the prism of the present. But to think that in a nation that had embraced slavery, he issued a document that freed the majority of slaves is remarkable. What a lot of people don't understand about the document is it does something else that's even more radical. It authorizes the enlistment of black soldiers in the U.S. Army. Think about that. We're not only going to free the slaves, we're going to put guns in their hands and send them back south to fight for the Union. So it was a 1-2 punch that was profound, and at the moment seemed that it would shift the balance of the war.
The question should be not what took them so long to do it, but how unbelievable it is that he did. And he did it gradually, as was his wont. So Lincoln takes these steps, and he does so under the doctrine of military necessity. And you can watch, again, it's an intellectual problem as much as it's any other kind of problem. Okay, how do we get from it's illegal and unconstitutional to free the slaves to I have the legal constitutional right to do so? And the answer is as a necessary means of war, as a way to promote the military effort. Now, the slaves themselves are not all quiet and passive in all of this. Right? The enslaved run away, deliver themselves to Union lines, and also force Lincoln to consider this. He says in July, the pressure upon me in this direction is great. Lincoln, oh, he's so, you know, so it's not just that Lincoln acts, Lincoln reacts. You know, the famous line of Lincoln's that I cannot claim to have controlled events, but to have been controlled by them.
How did Lincoln's views about the slaves change over the years of his presidency?
Well, if you think about the problem of race in America, race and the question of race continues to bedevil the nation in a variety of different ways. Now, if you think back to the 19th century, what are we going to do with these free blacks? That literally was the question that was asked.
If the slaves are freed, what are we going to do with them? The question is not always posed that way, but it has to be posed that way because that's the way in which they thought about the problem. For them, the problem with slavery was not only, yeah, slavery is wrong, it's immoral, it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, we should abolish the slaves. But then there's a second question. 4 million formerly enslaved persons now free. What are we going to do? And a lot of that is to understand the racialist ideology of the day, which varies in terms of where you want to go on the spectrum of quote-unquote racism. You know, there's actually a paternalistic benevolent racism, and it goes like this. And this isn't to justify it, but if we're going to be historians, we have to think the way in which the 19th century thought and not necessarily impose some of our own ideas upon them. Well, if you thought slavery was such a total institution, a barbaric, horrible, savage institution that deprived individuals of any idea of humanity, then any theory of personality means you have one of two types coming out of it. Either the enslaved are made to be so docile and childlike and infantilized that they can't possibly function for themselves and take on the responsibilities of adulthood, or they have been made so savage, so barbarous, that the result is going to be bloodshed, that they're going to exact revenge on their former masters. So what do we do?
And here's a classic example of Lincoln changing his mind. Lincoln, like many Americans, believed they can't live peaceably side by side with whites. So they believed in colonization. You know what we're going to do? We're going to get them voluntarily to emigrate out of the country. And Lincoln supported this. Indeed, he was a sucker for every colonization scheme that came his way because he believed that this was a solution to what we might call the race problem in America. African Americans didn't want that. Blacks said, no, we're Americans. We don't want to go to Liberia. That's one of the first countries founded as a colony for former blacks in America. We want to stay. And over time, Lincoln comes to understand that that's right. That not only should slavery be ended, but we must find a way for the black citizens of America to obtain their full rights as citizens within this country. He goes so far as to not only abandon colonization, but in the very last speech that he gives on April 11th, 1865, he endorses black suffrage.
We're talking about the evolution of Abraham Lincoln as president and commander-in-chief. So in that last speech, among other things, he says that he supports black suffrage for educated blacks and those who served. Now think about that. Shockingly, the right to vote today is still contested. Think about what it meant to give the vote to black men in 1865. But Lincoln was prepared to do so. This is a man who 11 years earlier didn't even know they deserved political and social equality. John Wilkes Booth is among the crowd who hears Lincoln deliver that speech, and he turns to his co-conspirator, Lewis Powell, and he says, that's the last speech he'll ever give. And we don't often think of Lincoln as a martyr to civil rights, but to the extent that while the conspiracy was in motion, it's that speech and the endorsement of black suffrage that immediately led Booth 3 days later to assassinate Lincoln. That's important to remember.
So we have this man, Abraham Lincoln, who starts out not so sure about whites and blacks being equal, certainly not certain that blacks should live in this country, against slavery, but not willing really to act against slavery, doesn't have the power to do it. And where do we end up? We end up with this man who not only frees the slaves, but he believes that you have to give black men the right to vote so that they can be full citizens of the nation. That's greatness.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
There's a lovely moment in your lecture when you talk about Lincoln growing a beard.
It's a fabulous story. It's one of the many great Lincoln stories. He grows it in response to a letter that he gets.
After he was elected, around the time of his election, what did he do? He grew a beard. He seems to do so in response to a letter that he gets from an 11-year-old girl named Grace Bedell. Grace writes him a letter on October 15th, 1860, and says, I've got four brothers. And part of them will vote for you anyway if you will let your whiskers grow. And I will try and get the rest of them to vote for you. You would look a great deal better, for your face is so thin. All the ladies like whiskers. And they would tease their husbands to vote for you, and then you would be president. My father is going to vote for you, and if I was a man, I would vote for you too. But I will try and get everyone to vote for you that I can. Remarkable letter from an 11-year-old girl.
And it's just beautiful. Of course, it captures some other fundamental truth about Lincoln. And that's how weird looking he was for the times. He was awkward. He was downright ugly. And he knew it. He's constantly making references to his appearance. Anyone who ever saw Lincoln jotted something down about how he looks. Walt Whitman, the great poet, was working in Armory Hospital. He used to see Lincoln coming and going. He writes a letter to his mother where he says, "I see the president every day. He is like a Hoosier Michelangelo, so awful ugly, he's almost beautiful." So, and now here you have this 11-year-old girl also saying, "You know, I think you'd look better with a beard." What's remarkable, of course, Lincoln responds. And he responds as if she's a constituent. And he says, "Thank you for your consideration." And indeed, he goes ahead and grows the beard. I also argue in my lecture that the beard is in effect also his war beard. It's grown between his election and his inauguration. He's preparing for the cataclysmic conflict that seems to be coming on the horizon.
Did he, above most other men of his time, feel deeply about the importance of preserving the Union right from the get-go?
Preserving the Union was everything to Lincoln. Time and again, he talked about the Union. He, in fact, creates in some ways the cult of Union. In his inaugural address, he talks about the perpetuity of the Union. He countered every chance he could, the argument being made by the secessionists that it's the states that had ultimate authority. No, Lincoln said. The federal government, the Union, that's what had ultimate authority, and that no one had a right to leave the Union. You can do all kinds of things if you're unhappy with the election of the president. You can wait 4 years and vote him out of office. You can try and organize a constitutional convention to change the frame of government. There are many things that you could do. What you can't do is leave.
Lincoln articulates this critical legal constitutional doctrine of the illegality of secession. That's what he's spending his time doing. He's, of course, a lawyer. He's done a tremendous amount of research. He argues that secession is an ingenious sophism. Those are his words. He says it is the essence of anarchy. You cannot have a government in which there's a constitutional right to secession. Lincoln said nonsense. The compact theory of government does not mean states take precedence over the federal government. Cannot be done. The nation exists before the state, and there are many parts of Lincoln's greatness. Part, of course, of his greatness is his ability to argue and sustain an argument for the nation, the Union, in predominance over the state.
And his defense of the Union, his articulation of that, is one of the great contributions to our history. That's the meaning of the Gettysburg Address. 47 years ago, our fathers came forth to create a new nation. That word nation, the address is a little over 200 words. He uses the word nation 5 times. That's what Lincoln believed in, right? Those mystic chords of memory that he spoke about. And that's what he defended, and that's ultimately what he preserved. His refusal to allow the Union to be lost is what kept this country together.
Do you think that without Lincoln, the United States would have split apart and remained split in a much more fundamental way than it is today?
You know, counterfactuals and hypotheticals are always difficult for historians to answer. Generally, we try to avoid answering them because you just can never know. But I think there's a strong likelihood. Without Lincoln's leadership, his determination, his skills, and a lot of luck, that indeed the strength of states' rights, the strength of secession may very well have led to the fracturing and breaking up of this nation into two nations or more. You know, it's worth noting that those questions are still alive, right? They're, you know, the state of California today is threatening to secede, and California has one of the world's largest economies. Questions of states' rights haven't gone away, although I do think the commonplace is to say this. Before the Civil War, the United States was plural. After the Civil War, it's singular. Lincoln was one of the driving forces to help make that so.
You said that the greatest thing about Abraham Lincoln may well have been that he changed his mind. Why is that so important?
You know, I tend to try not to talk about present matters when I lecture about the past, but I think we need only look around at the state of politics today on all sides of the political spectrum. This is a nonpartisan comment about the rigidity, about the ways in which positions become ossified, about the ways in which it seems that discourse is limited and people refuse to move in any direction. For me, it makes my admiration of Lincoln all the greater. How did this man, born in poverty, self-educated, how did he come to represent this ability and this willingness to think through things and to change his mind over time?
I'll give you two diametrically opposed quotes from Lincoln to show you how he changed his mind during the war. August 1862, Lincoln told delegates from Indiana who offered to raise two black regiments that, quote, "the nation could not afford to lose Kentucky at this crisis, and to arm the Negroes would turn 50,000 bayonets from the loyal border states against us that were for us." August 1862, not doing it. Here we go. January 1st, weeks after. "The colored population is the great available and yet unavailed of force for restoring the Union. The bare sight of 50,000 armed and drilled black soldiers on the banks of the Mississippi would end the rebellion at once. And who doubts that we could present that sight if we but take hold of it in earnest?" Isn't that wonderful? I think ultimately that's the measure of a great political leader. Change over time.
It is a remarkable phenomenon to study and to witness, and I'm not alone in doing that. You know, I often in my lecture quote W.E.B. Du Bois, the great African-American writer, historian, activist, founder of the NAACP. Du Bois thought a lot about Lincoln at the time of the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial. And one of the things that he said about him, he said, "I love him not because he was perfect, but because he wasn't, and yet he triumphed." That's the thing about Lincoln. We could see all the ways in which he wasn't perfect. We could see all the ways in which he was a bundle of contradictions. We can see all the ways in which he struggled in his own time. But in the end, he triumphed. And because of his triumph, this nation continues.
What do you hope that audiences will take away from this lecture?
My deepest hope for what audiences will take away from this lecture is to understand that all of us today can still become some better version of ourselves. Because I think the genius of Lincoln is that he was always becoming. He was always changing. He didn't start out as Abraham Lincoln. He became Abraham Lincoln. And what that means is any of us can also become the thing that we most hope we want to be. So in that sense, to see Lincoln, yes, it's to understand the past, it's to understand a seminal figure without whom this nation would be fundamentally different. But the best of history also allows us to understand something about ourselves.
I'm Richard Davies. Thanks for listening. Sign up on our website, onedayu.com, to become a member and access over 600 full-length video lectures from the world's finest professors.
Thank you. What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.